Welcome to Kin Folklore. We're excited to share our love for some of our favorite stories. And this season, we're exploring the politics of one of our most beloved fantasy worlds. We're back in Westeros to cover House of the Dragon on HBO. I'm Andrea.
And she's reading the histories and the philosophies while she's searching through the city. And I'm Paul, and we're cousins who started this podcast because we love to talk about fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we've covered His Dark Materials, The Witcher, Avatar, The Last Airbender, The Legend of Korra, and Lovecraft Country, and we've loved every moment of it. We're excited to dive into the larger canon of A Song of Ice and Fire and to talk about the history of our expansive world.
This week, we'll be discussing the 9th episode. We've made it this far.
Wow.
Just one left after that. Of season one, titled The Green Council, which aired on HBO this past Sunday. So if you haven't seen it yet, go watch it, come back after. We'll be discussing all of the content of the show, some stuff from Game of Thrones, and also some of the differences between Fire and Blood and this series. But we will not be spoiling future events from the book.
And just like Larry Strong, Kin Folklore will not be defeated.
Oh my God.
When it comes to adult content, we are 10 toes down giving you the info and the content you need. So if you're excited by a fireside chat with a little bit of mistletoe, you've come to the right place. It's time to get it wet.
I'm speechless. I'm never going to forgive HBO for doing this to me. This was worse than the bells.
Wow, that's saying a lot. She said it was worse than the bells. Oh my gosh.
I want to be perfectly clear. I have no problem with foot stuff. Like, if that's what you're into, that's what you're into. How Laris is into it is... this was so disgusting. Like, I felt for Allison. This was gross.
I mean, I didn't think we were going to go this far, this deep, but I will say this. What was the original ask, right? Like, when did he be like, hey, I got some information for you? And she's like, oh my gosh, I'll get a bag of silver. And he's like, well, kind of just want you to take your socks off. And
So she knew that he was into feet in that first dinner scene because she comes in the room and she takes her shoes off.
Ah.
So I don't know. I'd love to know how this relationship developed. But
when was the indecent proposal made? I want to know when the indecent proposal was made. I want to know.
I don't really need to know much about it because I'm trying not to think about it. But I do want to know, like how did this start up? Like, I'm good. I'm passing. I don't need to know. Okay, so let's talk about some of the important plot points. After being notified that the king has died overnight, Allison tells her father about Viserys' final words to her. And they gather the small council to plan to put Aegon on the throne. Lord Beesbury, the only truly loyal servant of Viserys, objects, citing Viserys' wish for Rhaenyra to succeed him, and is killed by Ser Crispy. Harold Westerling resigns as Lord Commander of the Kingsguard after Otto orders him to go to Dragonstone and kill Rhaenyra and her entire family. Like, it's no big deal.
But the thing is, he asks her to kill them and, like, he has dragons. He's like, go there, make it clean, and make it fast. These motherfuckers have dragons that you're sending him over there and they have dragons. It's not like it's going to be a quick thing.
Yeah, I have some notes for the hand of the... Well, the hand of no one right now, because rest in peace.
That's what Westerling said. Westerling was like, hey, until there's a king, you don't need me. I'm out.
Prince Aegon is nowhere to be found. His sister wife, Helaena, doesn't know where he is, and she utters another warning about the beast beneath the boards to her mother. Allison sends Crispy and Aemon to go find Aegon after learning that Otto has dispatched... Eric and Eric.
It's weird. It's like they're the same name, but only one letter off. I don't know. Maybe there's something fucked up about this.
Whatever. The Cargill twins to find Aegon as well. As the Greens close ranks, many of the servants are imprisoned, and Rhaenys, who is still in King's Landing, is locked in her room. Allison asks Rhaenys for her support, using all the leverage she has with House Velaryon. Rhaenys remains non-committal.
She's like blaming her for shit that she had no power over. Like, your daughter died. Your dog got a little bit obese. I don't know. Like, this is just really bad for partnering with Rhaenyra. So the Carghal brothers are approached by one of Mysteria's servants who say her mistress will only speak to the hand of the king. I mean, you guys are important, but not that important. She's only going to speak to him. And after Mysteria and Otto meet, which Otto is saying you are the infamous white worm, so he's been like trading secrets with someone he's never met.
I can't. No, they have met, but let's stick to the plot point. And then again, I have some notes for the king, the queen, the prince's hand. It's just a whole
mess. They definitely
met
on the fucking bridge of Dragonstone. Let's move on.
Yeah, this is not the first time. But okay.
Aegon is located, but Kristen and Aemon intercept Arryk and seize Aegon. They return him to his mother. And Allison finally confronts her father about using her in this game that he has been playing and refusing to have Rhaenyra murdered. When she returns to her room, Laris tells her about Mysterious spies in exchange for her participation in his foot fetish.
Just nasty.
Oh, man. The next morning, Sir Arryk Carghal releases Rhaenys from her room and tries to get her out of the city. They are separated when the crowds are forced to the dragon pit, where Aegon is crowned and anointed as king. Rhaenys sneaks away during the crowning ceremony and retrieves her dragon, the Red Queen, Maelys, and bursts through the floor. She seems to consider roasting their sorry green asses, but instead flies out. And that's where the episode ends.
But the series could have ended right there.
It could have ended there.
The series could have ended right there. And you know what? As much as I've been enjoying this series, I would have been fine.
Totally okay. This was like the one book to show change we would have all signed up for. Like, you know, it would have been great. We would have been like, yes, okay. Now there's new villains. But before we move on, first, I want to pay respect to some of the most loyal servants of truly who should be queen, Rhaenyra, the princess now, should be queen soon, Lord Beesbury and Lord Caswell. Lord Caswell was the guy you may recall who was like talking to Rhaenyra and Lenor and about how happy he was. They were walking up the stairs when the queen summoned her right after her birth. And she said, let me know if you need anything. She said, that day may soon come. And when it came down to it, he tried to get out and they intercepted him and they killed him. What a G. And Lord Beesbury, first guy who started a fan duel jousting ring. He really got in here and like made betting possible for the people of the realm. Great accountants, skills. Served two kings, the old king and King Viserys. Served them well, served them proudly, and was ready to serve the second king's daughter before he was murdered at the table. And let's not forget the thousands of people who showed up to the dragon pit, ready to cheer on, who they probably thought was going to be Rhaenyra. They didn't know who was driving in there. And then they get the announcement of who's going to be crowned, much to their surprise, only to have a dragon come through the floor, Kool-Aid Man style. Shout out to our homie who gave us that. All of them deserve to get one poured out for. So let's pour one out for Lord Beesbury, Lord Caswell, and the thousands or so of people who died in the dragon pit.
This goes out to all our fallen homies, yo.
Pull out low liquor.
Don't let the chin get like that, y'all.
Sad state of affairs here. You know, Lord Beesbury, first blood drawn in the Dance of the Dragons.
Yeah, it...
Loyal servant that he was.
The guy's actually a legend. Two kings in, the old king. Nobody else on that council had ever ever served with Jaehaerys. He's like served on Jaehaerys' council, served on Viserys' council, kept the book straight, kept the money straight, and they kept disrespecting him, you know? So, and we find out here really early that they had already been planning to oust Rhaenyra. They were already like, oh, let's kick in our plan that we've been working on. This is Tywin Lannister. Then we may proceed now with the full assurance of his blessing on our long laid plans.
Can I just say, no one bought Allison's story about the, like, not that they would have cared, but they were like, okay, whatever. Good on Otto for getting her to lie. Like, nobody believed her.
And that's why Beesbury goes off the way he does. Cause he's like, listen, I've known Viserys longer than any of you. There's no way you're going to convince me that Viserys in the 11th hour of his life was like, yeah, this thing that I've held tight to this whole time, I'm just changing my mind. And the only person here that heard it was the mother of the boy who you want to put on the throne. Come on, man. Like, this is a long fucking stretch.
Yeah, yeah. It was a stretch. And, like, you know, they're already getting their plans ready. They're going to contact River Run. They're going to contact Highgarden. They're allies. It's just like they're the gold being divided for safekeeping. Got to say, Tywin Lannister, pretty smart, yes. Huh? That's pretty smart. Interestingly, the Lord of River Run right now is Lord Grover Tully.
This is too much.
It's a minor, tiny, itty bitty spoiler, but since George made us deal with Eric and
Names are too much.
I'm just going to go ahead and say that, you know, Grover Tully has a grandson and his grandson name is Elmo.
I can't. I'm losing my mind. When you told me this, I went back and I just cannot believe that this is it. I cannot believe that. And what is Elmo's kid's name? Just for the record.
Oscar and Kermit.
George is not allowed to make names anymore. He needs to hire a consultant for naming characters. So let's get this straight. So River Run is actually Sesame Street. Now we know the way. Somebody told us how to get to Sesame Street, and it's through the fucking twins on our way to River Run. Oh my gosh, I cannot believe what we're talking about. So yeah, minor spoiler, but it's worth it based on the fact that George is not allowed to name characters anymore.
So can we just talk a little bit about this Kristen Cole Westerling? This whole the fallout of the small council meeting is pretty intense.
It is. It's very intense. And it's, as Beesbury says, it's seizure, it's theft, it's treason. It's all the things that Kristen Cole loses his temper and tries to force an old man to sit down, killing him by bashing his head into the clocking, like, globe things that we've been... I wonder what that's about. I wonder why we know what those are. Well, they've been definitely setting us up for this. But I think... I mean, it just highlights to me the Green Council. They're already within the Green Council trying to act as if they're doing some high, you know, moral thing and doing the king's wishes, which is totally a front. Do show who they really are, which is murderers and thieves. They're divvying up the gold. They're killing people on the spot that go against their wishes. And anyone like Westerling takes off his cloak and I honestly draws his sword and puts it towards Kristen Cole. And honestly, this is a little bit that goes back to Ned Stark and the Madness of Mercy. Like, slice this motherfucker open. Like, he just killed a sitting member of the council and he's supposed to be protecting the king's wishes. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's the fact that Kristen Cole not only faces, again, zero consequences for his actions, but then also is promoted within this episode is absolutely wild shit.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot make... Allison is playing with fire with Kristen and Laris, and she doesn't even seem to realize it. Neither of these guys are mentally stable, and she just doesn't, like, because they're her allies, she's willing to overlook all of this.
Yeah, but I think that she says and reveals it a lot in her conversation with Rhaenys. You know what I mean? Where she basically, I know we're not there yet, but she kind of says a lot about herself. Like, we may not be able to rule, but we're able to guide and to basically, she uses all kinds of fancy words for manipulate the people who we put in those seats. And so to me, I feel like she has been, she tries to feign ignorance, and we'll talk more about whether they accomplish that well or not, but she's really aware. Laris calls her on it. I think she is ignorant to the things around the prophecy, which we'll talk about. But I think there's multiple times where she tries to act as if she doesn't know. I mean, like, let's be honest. Like, your whole reason for Rhaenyra not being able to be trustworthy or like, you know, inherit the crown and have her birthright is because you feel like she was cuckolded somebody's son and is immoral, but you're okay to let somebody masturbate looking at your feet. And your son has, like, bastard children, and you've maybe given moon tea to, or poison to one of the servants in the house because he raped her. Like, this is, like, all immoral things that you're at, you have the veneer of morality to then kind of, like, do all these heinous, heinous acts. It's upsetting.
Yeah, I want to talk towards the end of the episode about some of the problems I have with how they're writing the women.
Yeah.
But I just found the fact that Allison was so stunned by this completely unbelievable. That she is stunned by the fact that the man who's been telling her that any challenge to Rhaenyra's power would have to be extinguished is going to extinguish the challenge to Aegon's power. Like, it makes no, like, of course that's what they want to do. Of course that's what they feel they need to do, which is to kill Rhaenyra. And I just want to be perfectly clear, because I think I've seen a lot of stuff like, where people are saying that she's just, it's just about Rhaenyra and Daemon. No, they basically ordered the murders of 9 people.
Mm-hmm.
So we got Daemon, Rhaenyra, who definitely have to go, but then Jace, Lucerys, Joffrey, that's 5. Aegon the Younger, Viserys, that's 7. And that's assuming that they wouldn't also kill Baela and Rhaena. Now, we know that Baela last week was ready to fight. She was ready to go.
Yeah, exactly.
So my guess is that she's not going to just sit around and let this happen. I do think that there's a chance Baela and Rhaena could survive just because they're aligned with House Velaryon. But, like, I just want to see the gravity of what's being plotted here. The murder of 9 people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, here, I guess this is the time for my notes for Otto. Okay. Sir, you took the King's Guard and a couple of folks to go get back the stolen egg in Episode 2? That was episode 2?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, both Crispy and Westerling were shook then. Okay? Yeah. This is not a job where you take a couple of Kingsguard to go murder Daemon Targaryen and his entire family, most of whom have dragons.
Yeah.
Like, what are you even like, and then what happens? Let's say the Kingsguard manages to do this. Let's say that they manage to kill Rhaenyra and her kids, or they kill Rhaenyra and Daemon and they imprison the kids. How does the realm react to that? The realm is just going to be like, oh, cool. That was great. Yeah. The whole plan is absurd. And it just shows that, like, Otto is not ready for prime time.
At all. No, he's a peacetime consigliere. You know what I mean? Like the Godfather. He's not the guy. He's not the guy you want in a war. And that's gonna actually play out, because he's coming up with all of these ideas that don't even make sense. Like, it doesn't make sense what he's talking about. All it is in the idea of just gaining power. I mean, let's talk about the fact that he also is like, they're also sitting there thinking about how they're going to keep, they're not really sure, nor have they thought out whether or not they have Storm's End in hand or in pocket, right?
Yeah, I mean, Storm, I felt them on that, because I was kind of like, how does Storm, I think Storm's End, you can kind of assume at this point that if you get Rhaenys, then perhaps you get, you know, Storm's End, because she is, her mother was a Baratheon, you know, that's her uncle and her cousin. So but they're clearly not sure about it, but you know, they're happy to line up a marriage.
Yeah.
He's got four daughters.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we got one unmarried son. Let's make it happen.
Let's figure it out. You know, this is what we want to do. Yeah, I do find it funny that Allison screamed on the Master of Laws, like, you say one more thing and you're going to the wall. Wow.
It was a great moment. Like, okay, I do. So I have a lot of feelings about what Allison might be sincere about and what the show is trying to tell us she's sincere about, but actually doesn't make that much narrative sense. But I do think that she sincerely does not want to just have Rhaenyra killed. Like, I think she would be quite comfortable to watch Rhaenyra sit in a prison for the rest of her life. But I think she sincerely does not wish for her former friend and her stepdaughter to be murdered. So I thought it was very, very, very amusing that this is the thing that, like, now she's upset. You know, she's showing that she has some fight to her.
Yeah. I mean, but it's self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Like, she could have said nothing about what she heard that night. She could have let it go, let everything play out, go the way that it is. But a part of her wants her son to be the king. A part mm-hmm. of her wants these things to happen and play out. So, I mean, she wants those things, but she doesn't want, she vacillates in the action. She wants the result, but she wants the result in this imagined way, not in the practical ways that these things must happen. So if you really don't want her to be killed, then you let her assume the throne, knowing that your son will be like, well, I guess he wouldn't be next in line, but he'd be in the line of succession. So you have to, like, let that play out. Like, if you don't want that to happen and you want to, like, honor your husband, but you don't want that. You want your cake and eat it too.
Imagine if Rhaenyra had the full backing of House Targaryen and Sunfire, Dreamfire, and Vhagar also on her side. What lords of the realm would be out here like, oh, I guess we can't have a woman queen?
Yeah.
They wouldn't be able to say anything, because House Targaryen would be united behind their queen. But because of all of the drama between Allison and Rhaenyra, it can't happen.
Yeah.
Now we have two factions within one house, and their entire notion is that she's unfit, in part because she's a woman, in part because she's a slut in their minds. And I'm like, okay, but Aegon's also out here running around making little black fires.
Yeah, exactly. But I would say one other thing that has been in my head for a while to say is, this shows you again where Viserys wasn't seeing the whole board, in the fact that, you know, the Targaryens were not well received by everybody, and one of the people they were not well received by, you know, was really Old Town. Like, you know, there were a lot of places in Old Town, especially the Sept being there, where the Faith Militant and other orders did not really love the idea of some of the things that they were about. And they couldn't beat their strength and their might. So now you have a house that's from Old Town, that has now, you know, accepted in air quotes that the Targaryens are rulers. But there is a little underlying agenda, in my opinion, that he should have never raised up another house. He should have kept the houses that were already sworn allies from the beginning, the Velaryons, the other people, because this has just opened the door to weaken, to put their house on the same footing as the other houses. Because if the Hightowers had no blood that had any sort of access to dragons, we're not discussing this. Same as the Lannisters, same as all these people were all scared and shook of people from Old Valyria and had no recourse to do anything about it until Viserys saw, oh, well, let's just change this up and switch it up.
Yeah, this was infuriating to watch. I think that much of this episode is very well done. I just think it's really frustrating to watch the Greens do exactly what they were ready to accuse Rhaenyra and Daemon of doing.
100%.
And from what we've seen, and we do know the Blacks have been preparing as well, right? Rhaenyra married Daemon in part because she needed him as a partner, but also because she knew people would be less likely to mess with her if they were married. But Daemon going to get those dragon eggs last week, that was preparation. That's mm-hmm. not just because Daemon likes dragons.
Yeah.
he knows their weapons of mass destruction. What I don't think Rhaenyra and Daemon have been plotting is murdering Aegon, Helaena, and Aemond. So, you know, I just think that there has been some planning, but not this type, you know, not this kind of like brutality that all the men on the small council are just kind of fine with.
Yeah.
Except for obviously Beesbury and Westerling.
Orwell's out here like talking about bloodshed. He's Orwell's like, hey, a living challenger invites battle and bloodshed. Goodness, man. Orwell.
It's just, I mean, Rhaenyra is also pregnant. Like, they were really going to send some folks in the night to kill a pregnant woman and, you know, 8 children.
Yep.
Like,
that's the Greens. Don't. Behold the Greens. There you go.
So. Yeah, this is really upsetting. Should we talk about what happens in Helena's apartments?
Yeah, I thought that there was some, I thought that one of the things that I heard that was, you know, it's not really, it's a prophecy, but it's like so close to like when it's about to happen, and in the midst of it happening, she is really a dreamer, seer, however she goes. It's our fate, I think, to crave always what is given to another. If one possesses a thing, the other will take it away. And she's saying that to, like, you know, her lady's maid.
I think she was telling the children that.
You think she's saying the children that, or asking the lady's maid to agree?
No, I think she's talking to the kids.
Yeah, that makes sense. That
because, you know, they're little, they probably were fighting over toys or whatever, but yeah, I think she's talking to the kids. And it just, I found this like quiet moment with Helaena so interesting, because I just think she has like a different way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Even when she's not doing prophecy, and I thought it was fascinating. I also loved that her embroidery was it was an insect.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, she's still into insects. We finally get to meet the twins,
mm-hmm.
Jaehaerys and Jaehaera. These are Aegon and Helaena's children, allegedly, because some rumors on the internet that these are actually Aemon's children.
Huh. Yeah, really?
Yeah, I don't like it. I'm gonna stick with these are Aegon's children.
I mean, I'm not recalling right now off the top of my head, like, honestly, but I would say that I'd never read that in Fire and Blood for sure.
No, it's not. It's definitely not canon. Like, that's not in the book.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think these are Aegon's kids, and we'll leave it at that. She did try to warn them about the beast beneath the boards. She tried.
She sure did. She tried to tell them twice.
Yeah. And when she tried, and when Allison was talking that shit, and she stops her mid-sentence, there's a beast beneath the boards. Like, yo, chill. What are you doing? And then Eamon arrives, you know, full cosplay.
Everyone was doing a little Damon cosplay. There were a lot of crime cloaks and murder cloaks.
Listen, the murder cloak is something that if I see it, it's no longer a disguise. I see you in that murder cloak. I know what you're up to. You're up to some you're up to some fuck shit. You know what I mean? Like, this is what's happening. Oh, man. It's crazy. So the mission is to find Aegon. Everyone needs to find him. And, you know, it's between Alicent and her dad. They're both sending factions out to find them. And, you know, a lot of, like you said, a lot of cloaks. Sir Criston has like a weird poncho hat thing going on. I don't know what that was. But Otto sends Eric and Arik into the city. Tells Eric no one must know except him and to bring Aegon to him and him alone. So Eric takes his brother you know, to a place where children are mutilated. It was a really tough scene to see.
It was awful. This was the worst. This was like one of the worst things that they pulled from the book. This is how Aegon is found, supposedly, according to Mushroom, in the book. Although he's not there in the show, and also Mushroom adds a little bit more color to it. But to see these children was so hard. I felt bad for the actors.
Yeah. Me too.
This was a tough scene to watch children act in. I was like, I'm not sure this is the scene they should have pulled.
Yeah, I agree. It was really, really, really rough to see. And it's brutal. You know, you're seeing like kids with their nails. They say they sharpen their nails and their teeth. And this is how they treat them to fight. So for people's amusement, and they mutilate each other as people watch. Like, it's like children in a fighting pit. It's really rough. And we, as the twins are discussing, you know, Eric tells Arik to look over in the corner, and there is a young boy that looks to be born out of wedlock, and it is Aegon's child, from what we, one of many is what he says, that were born out of wedlock. So now we know that, you know, Aegon's been out here doing that, and they're still trying to put him on the throne. So...
I just want to note one thing that I think is actually important for those who are keeping score of like what Alicent understands that she's doing. This is not seen by Sir Criston or Eamon. So they know, they go to the pleasure house looking for him. They know that he likes to go into the city and to, you know, couple in a bowel in the bowels
in
the pleasure house
of a pleasure house,
but they don't know this. They don't have the same information that, you know, his Kingsguard has, which is that he has, you know, many children out of wedlock running around King's Landing. And I think that's important to note, because so much of Alicent's issues with Rhaenyra are about the fact that she thinks that her children, you know, are the strong boys. So as far as Alicent's concerned, even at the end of this episode, even though she knows her son is garbage because she knows that he's a rapist, she doesn't know about this part, which, not to say it would change her mind. I just think it is notable that we should give Alicent as much leeway as she needs, because she needs a lot. She's doing some crazy stuff in this episode.
Man, if only the words Dracarys could have been said by Maelys herself. I think Maelys would have said them. She could have. So Eric tries to convince his brother that Aegon's unfit. And I would agree. I think everybody knows he's unfit.
I mean, Aegon says he's unfit.
Yeah. Aegon says he's unfit. He doesn't want this. That's why he's going through all of these things. And again, you know, another Targaryen not really wanting it. So when they do get approached by the woman, this conversation with Otto, I want to talk about this. They get the hand of the king, Eric and Arik, and he meets with Massaria, and Massaria tells Otto that he can have Aegon if he puts an end to the treatment of the kids in Flea Bottom. But I really want to dig into this whole thing around Otto being so you're the White Worm, I take it. Like, what do you read that with? Because we talked about it earlier, but I don't get why he acts surprised that, one, he's been conversing with the White Worm. He said that this one has never led him astray before when he was about to snitch on, when he snitched on Rhaenyra. So how does he not know that it's Mysterio?
I just feel like this is another moment of Otto is an idiot.
Yeah.
So you've been in business with this spy master for at least a decade. Mm-hmm. But what we actually know is 16 years. And you've never... Also, by the way, Mysterio looks great.
Hasn't really for all aged, that time that's passed, right?
Hasn't really aged a day. I've got questions. But you've never... like sought to find out who they are or demanded in-person meeting, which is what I like. At a certain point I would be like, okay, she's getting good information, but like, I would like to know who you are. So can we meet face to face? I can understand if Otto doesn't remember Mysterio from the bridge. I think that's a little bit unusual for this show. Like in this universe, people do tend to remember folks.
Yeah, but
like...
just 1 second, because there was a direct question asked when Corlys goes, so who is this Mysterio? Daemon's whore. Like, I mean, he knows who she is.
I forgot about that. Yeah. Yeah, it's true. That's a good point. I mean, maybe he does recognize her, but he just didn't know she was a White Worm.
Agreed. I agree.
I still find this. Odd.
I agree that he
because
doesn't
also
know.
Doesn't like if he didn't know that Mysterio was a White Worm and he recognized her, then he doesn't think she's on Team Black. Like I don't understand this. I can't tell sometimes if this is like setup or not great writing.
Yeah,
I really can't.
Yeah, it's so crazy because she's all like, well, know that if you know that I was the one that put him on the throne, blah, blah, blah. It never crosses his mind to say, how do I know that you're not setting us up and working with Daemon? Like, never. He's never going to ask that question. Like, even if he didn't know that Mysterio was the White Worm, he does know Mysterio because he very clearly has stated that. So the question then becomes, if he doesn't realize that she's the White Worm, once he realizes, oh shit, the White Worm is Mysterio, he's not going to have any questions about her affiliation with the Blacks and whether or not he's been being played and fed information by her on Daemon's behalf?
Yeah. I mean, we're asking the question of who is she working for, right? It seems like she's still working for herself mostly.
Yeah.
But Larys later intimates that she's been working with Otto to spy on the Queen all of this time. So I don't know what's happening here. I'm a little bit confused. And we should also note there were witnesses, right? Maybe Otto's playing a little dumb.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
But I don't think that's what's happening, but I just can't be sure.
Yeah, that's true. But they eventually get, you know, to Aegon, and then they're confronted by Aemond. The twins are confronted by Aemond and Crispy. And you know, during a fight between Arryk and Crispy, you know, Aemond gets Aegon, and Aegon saying, you know, I'm not suited. I don't want to do this. Is our father dead? And he's making a plea to get out of there. Do you think Aemond will let him go?
Yes, 100%. So we didn't talk about the conversation between Sir Crispy and Aemond.
Yeah.
Couple of things here. Aemond essentially says that he is next in line to the throne. That is untrue.
Yeah, agreed.
Aegon has children. So I don't know. In that moment, I was like, this guy might... If Sir Criston wasn't there, he might have done harm to his own brother. And I even wondered if that's why he volunteered to go in the first place. Is he trying to convince Sir Criston that his brother is not fit to rule by taking him to the pleasure house where his brother wasn't and hadn't been in years? And then by saying, I'm the one who should be the king because look at me. I've been studying. I can fight. You know, it should be me. And if they look for me, I intend to be found. And I think he's kind of trying to figure out, like, Can he get Sir Criston to that point?
He really calls him a waste man. He says, "Here I am searching for this wastrel."
It's a great insult. Yeah. It's a great insult.
I'm just saying, it's like that's the Westerosi version of waste man. He's a waste man. Oh, man, it's so crazy. I, the younger brother who studies the histories and philosophies. It's I who trains with a sword, who rides the largest dragon in the world. Tis I who doesn't really understand the line of succession because I'm not. After all that reading, you still are getting C's, bro.
It's super confusing why he says, "I am next in line to the throne. I intend to be found." We know who the next in line to the throne is. Yeah. They're sitting with your sister. Yeah. Like, I don't understand. I don't get it. I do think, to answer your original question, which was, does he let him go? I think so.
Yeah, I do too.
I think he really was under the impression that they would come looking for Aemon if they couldn't find Aegon, and that he was ready to serve. Yeah. The second son's got a lot of problems.
They really do. You know who else has a problem? Is Sir Crispy. I was blown away at the gall, the sheer audacity of this motherfucker to even utter the words, "Every woman is an image of the mother to be spoken of in reverence." You literally called Rhaenyra a spoiled cunt.
I got nothing to say to this guy. This guy is the most realistic character on this show, period.
Yeah.
I have dated this guy. My friends have dated this guy. I got nothing to say about this nonsense where he's spouting off the seven and then calling a woman who jilted him a cunt. This is standard operating procedure for some men. So I got nothing to add.
It's lost on him. That he doesn't even see what he's saying, right? Like he's.
I don't think it is lost on him. I don't think it is lost on him. I think that he would argue that Rhaenyra is not worthy, the way that that other women are. That she is less worthy, and yeah, so that's why he calls her that. Like I don't actually think that he would have any issue with it. I think he could justify it away.
Yeah. He probably could. He could justify away a lot of things. I mean, he killed somebody at a wedding. He killed somebody at a small council meeting. He's out here in the streets trying to find Aegon no matter what. And he has this weird, awkward scene to go before that where Alicent is basically like, you know, all the feelings you have for me as your queen. Yeah, okay. Yeah, something's going on here. We skipped over that, but I don't want to leave that unsaid, that this little sneak away when Aemon was getting his eye cut out and all that stuff was happening. There's something going on.
I totally agree. There's some tension there. I'm still wondering, you know,
I got where serious he was questions.
On Driftmark. I got serious, questions.
Serious questions. I also have questions of how they thought that this was a good idea to lock a person up in what was their home for a long time. In their room, and what they did to Rhaenys. Like, how did this? This is like literally her home. She grew up here.
The whole Rhaenys thing is. They could have just let. I know that they're worried about people finding out that the king is dead, but they could have just let Rhaenys leave as planned without raising the alarm. I guess they were worried someone would say something to her, but. Alicent clearly thinks that she can try to get this woman to her side. Everything she says to her, you know, we mentioned this earlier. It's not even, none of this has to do, a lot of it doesn't have anything to do with Rhaenyra.
Nothing. Very,
like,
very.
Rhaenyra did not kill Laena. Like, I don't know what she's trying to do here, but I will say, I thought this scene was great. It was very well acted. Eve Best and Olivia Cooke put in great performances here.
Yeah.
And when she calls her dear cousin, I was like, huh, okay.
How?
I thought you were I thought you were still a Hightower.
I know, you're out here rocking green, coming into people's weddings, all with, like, you know, all the disrespect. Like, you know, like, I don't understand, like, how she's talking, dear cousin. You're not a Targaryen. You've made that very clear.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I did really, when she said the Iron Throne was yours by blood and temperament, I love that line. I think it's a great line, but I was so infuriated by Alison Hightower saying this when she literally has sent two people into the city to look for her son, who is awful.
Yeah.
And she is supplanting the heir who it's her right by blood.
Her right by blood, her right by all the people who swore fealty to her. And also, let's be honest, she spent a lot more time in the small council chamber, and you've gotten a chance to up close and personal witness her making important decisions. It makes no sense. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, Alison has such a skewed view of Rhaenyra that I just, so much of this is, she sees what she wants to see.
Yep.
And she hears what she wants to hear. And she knows Aegon is not fit to rule. And yet, she still persists. I do love what Rhaenys said to her at the end of this conversation. And yet you toll still in service to men, your father, your husband, your son. You desire not to be free, but to make a window in the wall of your prison. Have you never imagined yourself on the Iron Throne? Yeah. And I think truthfully, Alicent never has imagined herself on the Iron Throne. I think Alicent is so obsessed with tradition and what she thinks her traditional role should be that she's never had considered this, having Rhaenys say this to her.
She thinks her whole thing is to guide. We may not rule, but we may guide the men that do gently away from violence and destruction instead of towards peace. Like, you know, this is so at the core of it, it's not only jealousy, it's not only the idea that, you know, Rhaenys was probably better by blood and by temperament, and that Rhaenyra is the rightful heir. There's also a sense that she doesn't feel like women deserve it, or that they should, or that even if they deserve it, that it's not their place to rule, which is fucking unfortunate because you're there in the realm and has been really ruling the realm for quite a while Viserys was sick.
Mm-hmm. And the notion that women are more peaceful, I just don't buy it. Yeah. But I think it's supposed to be ironic, because here we have at the center of this conflict, you know, two women.
Yeah.
Who surely are going to drive the realm to close to destruction. So I thought this was a very well-written scene. I thought it was great. And, you know, Alicent, I think, takes what Rhaenys says to her somewhat to heart, because then she goes to her father and tells him she's sick of his shit. It was great stuff.
Yeah.
Finally.
And his response was fucking chilling. She's showing strength. She's showing resolve. She's basically saying, checkmate, motherfucker. I have the king. Like, I have the future king. Like, the guy who you want to put on the throne, I have him. And we're going to do shit my way. And instead of being like, you know what, I have respect for you, my daughter, he goes, you look so much like your mother in this light. What?
Yeah. What a creep. Otto Hightower sucks.
Yeah,
he does. I hate him.
He really does.
I can't even veil my hatred. He's just the worst. I do think that what's really dope about this, though, is that Alicent's the one who comes up with the political plan. She was the Toby Ziegler and Josh Lyman of this moment.
Yeah.
I was like, this is actually a good plan. She decides that he's going to be anointed at dawn. All of King's Landing will witness it. He's going to assume authority, and he'll have both Blackfyre and Aegon the Conqueror's crown.
Yeah.
I was like, this is good. This is good optics. This is very smart. You just kind of take power as if it was meant to be yours all along. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah. not my favorite that it's happening, but definitely a good strategy. No,
of course not. But if we, you know, obviously you and I have been very vocal. We are Team Black, and it is what it is. People can be upset about that. But like, let's give her credit for scheming here and understanding what matters in this moment. It's not all the letters that Otto wants to send to River Run and into other places. It's actually just showing that we are in charge. Someone is in charge. The king is dead. Long live the new king.
They literally said in the Green Council, I mean, you were... You were there. We watched this episode together, so this was great. When they said in the Green Council, the king is dead, I audibly was like, long live the queen.
You really were.
Oh, man. It was. It's how I feel. Can't help it. And then... Did we
talk at all about what Otto previously did in locking up the... we don't know what happened to them, but in asking the lords and ladies at court to kneel.
Yeah, no, I was just about to mention it. So I think that was really, really crazy. He asked them all to kneel, and most did, but there were a few houses that did not. House Fell did not. I don't know who. Did you make out the sigil of the other person who did refuse not to kneel?
It was Lord Meriwether. I actually could not make sense of his sigil. Like, I couldn't make sense of his outfit at all. Mm-hmm. I found this out through IMDb. I like went through the entire cast list. And I believe this was Lord Meriwether.
Yeah. And then
which tracks in the book, though, that's one of the families that doesn't immediately kneel.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I thought that they were escorted out. And then there was like, obviously we did talk about the servants and everybody being put in the cells.
Lord Caswell bending the knee though was smart. I think that he didn't want to be imprisoned. His plan was to go and warn Rhaenyra. I think where he screwed up his plan is he didn't get a murder cloak to leave the castle. He just like walked out.
Yeah, where he screwed up his plan was he got on full horseback, no murder cloak, and was like, open the gates. And they were on complete lockdown. He didn't think that it was better to kind of like try to sneak out like on foot, then find a way to get to a boat or something. Like, this is craziness. Like, I don't understand what he was thinking.
Yeah, it's poor guy. I mean, he doesn't seem like the type of guy who's involved in like, you know, spycraft. So I don't think he really thought this through. And I think there's a certain amount of like when people are doing horrible things, even if you think very little of them, you can still be shocked by the lengths they're willing to go. And so I think maybe he thought if he just got out quick enough, you know, they wouldn't pursue him.
Also, have an alibi. Have a fucking alibi. They're like, he's all like, he's making assumptions. Okay, well then where were you going? Silence.
Yeah.
Really? Nothing? Just nothing, huh? That's
life,
it?
Life of crime, not for poor Lord Caswell.
No, Lord Caswell, definitely not. So then we have the scene where, you know.
We don't have to talk about it.
Huh?
We don't have to talk about it.
Yeah, you don't have to talk about it. I do want to talk about one thing in the Laris and Allison scene.
I'm good. I didn't even. I've seen this scene one time. On rewatch, I was like, nope, not even for the pod. I'm sorry to our audience because there have been many things that I've been willing to watch 2, 3, even 4 times for y'all. This was not one of them. I said, I don't need to do this.
Yo, it's just the hand motion. It's just too much.
It's not when she takes her stockings off or anything like that. Like, I'm not squeamish about feet. Like, whatever. Allison has feet. I don't care. It's the fact that this guy is masturbating, like, and she's so disgusted.
She has to look away.
Yeah, I'm good. I didn't need to see that.
But what I did want to talk about that I thought was important to mention is this is where the information that he gives that allows, like, this to go down is that Masseria as we said, has been, you know, aware of everything going in through her, through different spies that she has in the, in the Red Keep, and one of them happens to be Allison's lady's maid. And so I think that was a big revelation of how close this can get, how close that people can get to you without your knowledge.
Yeah, and did you catch that when Talia was lighting the candles, that was probably when she was alerting Miss Arya that the king had died?
100%.
I didn't catch it on the first watch. On the first watch, I thought she was just like, I don't know, doing some religious of the seven ceremony. On the second watch, I was like, oh, this is how Miss Arya knew so quickly.
Yeah, 100%.
Because she lit the candles, which I thought was a great detail.
Yeah, me too.
I really enjoyed that.
Me too. I thought it was awesome. I really, really did. I liked that they did that detail, because it's like, that's what, how she, it's letting you know that there's so many things moving. And I also caught that the boy that we see in the beginning could be one of Masseria's also, because he went with a note directly to her, to Talia, and put it in her hand, in her pocket.
I wondered about him. The reason I didn't draw a lot of attention to him in the summary, and when we were talking earlier about all this, I'm not sure who this kid is, mm-mm, but he was dressed almost like he was, you know, like a prince or something. Like, he's mm-hmm dressed very well for a servant kid, right? Mm-hmm. I had questions. I wasn't sure what they were trying to do with this kid, or he was, you know, not to say that the servants who work in the Red Keep are not well dressed. They are. They're pretty well dressed, but like, yeah, I think at the very least he's one of Miss Arya's spies.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a cupbearer. She definitely could be.
Yeah, it could be one of the, like, the kids who's at court with their family. Mm-hmm. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's possible.
So then we have Eric freeing Rhaenys at dawn, seeing Lord Caswell hung now, because, you know, not great with the alibis. Left as an example for all to see. And Rhaenys asks where they are. She knows the tunnels. She wants to know where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And
I caught that too. It was like, huh. It's interesting that they made a point of Rhaenys noting the tunnels.
Yeah.
Right? Because we know Rhaenyra and Daemon know those tunnels inside and out. So I thought that was fascinating, because Team Black knows those tunnels already. So why did Rhaenys need to, you know, note that they came out an unusual entrance? And it was, I believe it was the same entrance that Daemon and Rhaenyra came out of.
It looked like it to me. It definitely looked like it, that's what it was. What did you,
I'm not sure. I didn't do like a side by side, but it felt recognizable. I thought it was the same way that Daemon led Rhaenyra out.
It looked like it, because it, except in daytime to me. That's what I saw as well. So I was wondering the same thing.
I also noticed Rhaenys wasn't really carrying anything. I mean, she had a murder cloak, but that Eric was. Why? He had a little messenger bag.
He was trying to get to that boat. He's like, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. I'm taking a risk. I don't want to get hung. You see your boy over here? He was not for it.
Yeah, I think it was interesting that he wore his gold cloak.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting too. I wonder why. Why do you think he did that though?
I think he was thinking that he would find easier passage to the city with that authority behind him.
Yeah.
But it was risky. I mean, maybe he was also trying to pretend he was his brother too. Like, you know, if someone stops him, he can say, you know, on behalf of the queen, I'm doing this. But I don't know. She's wearing a murder cloak. And he's just in his regular uniform. So I thought that was interesting.
Did you think that I noticed her stop and look at the Black Dread Skull.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I wondered what that was about.
She would have seen the Black Dread when he was alive. Mm-hmm. And it also was Viserys' dragon. She never saw Viserys when he died. So she would have seen, you know, his dragon skull, this symbol of, you know, the strength of their house. And also, yeah, so on that, on the house level, it's like, wow, here's this dragon that you know, represent the strength of my house and was the key dragon and one of the key dragons in, you know, conquering this realm. And here's, like, you know, I'm in the middle of sneaking out of my former home. So I, you know, that I'm being imprisoned in. And here, you know, and the person who rode that dragon is no longer here. You know what I mean? None of them.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. You know, sometimes I do, not that I forget, but sometimes I think it's easy to think of Rhaenys as House Velaryon. Because her and Corlys are such a united front together. Well, not so much anymore, but have been. But she's a Targaryen. Through all the way. Like, she's a Targaryen. And so she's kind of stuck between these two houses and, like, trying to figure out what's best for both of them. And I could definitely see that her passing Velaryon and looking was sort of like a moment of remembrance for her cousin Viserys, but also remembering who she is as a Targaryen.
Yeah, I mean, I instantly, as she's being pushed through the streets and all of that's happening, you know, I went to the scene of, you know, in the beginning of Game of Thrones in my mind, of Ned, you know, Ned being beheaded, but also, like, them trying to, you know, do this whole pomp and circumstance in front of the people around the fact that, you know, he's not recognizing Joffrey if he'd only recognize him as the true king. And here's another person who's really taking the throne by force, the family, and putting on this show for the realm to say that this is what it is. And another person's family member that, you know, for her, it's the House of the Dragon, not the Starks. She's, like, seeing her family's legacy being basically, like, hijacked. And she's having to witness it as she's going through the street in a cloak and trying to hide and not be seen and not be noticed. And that's why I found it super troubling that she wouldn't just be like, screw this. This is my family's legacy. Like, unless she felt... maybe they left her to just, like, you know, blow in the wind because they didn't name her queen. But I just really found it fascinating that she was the one who was witnessing this coup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it was interesting to have her there since she's not there in the book, but, like, to kind of see this through her eyes. Mm-hmm. I noticed that the scene at the coronation, much of it is shot from the perspective of Rhaenys. Mm-hmm. And so I think that context that you're giving it is perfect, because I think that's what we're supposed to draw from it.
Yeah.
Like, I think that the show really set up the Greens as, like, the worst, but also demonstrated that they're not united either, that mm-hmm. they are... they don't like each other very much. They're also a house divided. But they did demonstrate a united front when they got to the Dragon Pit. And I think watching it through Rhaenys' eyes, if we have the context of she should have been queen, none of this should have happened. Like, so if Jaehaerys and Alysanne's children had not, that most of their lives hadn't ended so tragically, like, none of this would happen. Like, maybe the realm would even have remained peaceful for longer. But to see the Hightowers essentially propping up Aegon must have hit her especially hard when it's another woman being passed over, and also just seeing, knowing what's going to come next. She has this contact. She was the one who pointed out that it's been a long time since there's been war and a conflict, and that these knights are the knights of summer, basically. and so I think that it's really impactful to see her watching Aegon being crowned from her point of view.
Yeah, I mean, like, she said all that, and she also very much told, you know, Rhaenyra that the realm would never accept a woman to rule them. They'd sooner mm-hmm. burn it down. You know what I mean? They'd sooner do that than to see that happen. So I think that, like, she's been really, to see, like, her own words coming true, it's kind of wild. You know what I mean? Like, if you think about it. So
yeah, and I don't think she likes either of these sides, right? I'm not a big fan of Daemon and Rhaenyra. She's not a big fan of Alicent, but I think that she still thinks that what they're doing is wrong.
100%.
It's just wrong.
Yeah, she says when the conversation with Alicent, where she's like, "So your idea of peace is locking me up and taking the throne." Okay, cool. You know what I mean? Kind of thing. And you're right. I think, like, it's got to be a weird perspective too, as we're talking about this, because, you know, her uncle was Balon, her dad was Aemon, and Aemon would have been king. I mean, Aemon rode Caraxes and Balon rode Vhagar. Like, so a lot, if those guys live, right? Like, if they live, like, Viserys is definitely not king. He's so far down in the line of succession along with Daemon if those two live, because you would have to, there's still actually Targaryens that would have been in the line of succession that are women that are alive right now that are, like, just not in the realm anymore. So you have so, that are not, like, in King's Landing. So you have so many other people that would have possibly been around, that this is not happening. Like, Viserys doesn't have the opportunity to do this, even if Emma dies.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you got to think about that from her perspective. It's like, damn, my dad was going to be king. Then my uncle was going to be king. Then I was going to be queen.
Or Lenore, right?
Or Lenore, yeah. And now my kids are dead. My dad is dead. My uncle's dead. My cousin's dead, who I grew up with. And my other cousin is, like, married to the person who they want to start this war about. And my dad's dragon is basically over there too, right? Like, Daemon's dragon is her dad's dragon. Mm-hmm. So it's a wild thing for her to be witnessing. Like, honestly, like, if you really put it in that perspective.
Yeah, I agree. Which makes sense why she does, you know, part of what she does, which is interrupt.
Yeah.
This travesty.
100%.
I mean, I do think, we should talk a little bit about the Aegon Alicent carriage ride.
Yeah.
Because it was super frustrating. And I think we learned quite a bit about Aegon this episode, even though we already knew that he was trash. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that we learned, okay, so first of all, we know his family has no idea who he is, like, as a person. Mm-hmm. I can't tell if Aemon took Sir Criston to that brothel to stall, or if he just, like, really doesn't have any clue where his brother is. I think it could be either one.
I think he took his brother. I think he took Criston there to make him start to question why they're even looking for Aegon, because he stays real mum about his own, you know, partaking in some of the things, but he talks a lot about Aegon urging him to come down here. He mentions that they're men of morals, and so they won't have any idea of where he is before he gives the whole thing about being a philosopher and a historian. I think he was trying to pour some salt on, we know what the Greens are about, snitching. You know what I mean? He was trying to be like, yo, look at this dude. This dude's out here doing all this fuck shit. He's messing with whores. He's doing this. He's at the brothels in the bowels of a pleasure house. Like, please give me the crown. That's what he was doing.
Yeah, but they still would have not found. I agree. I think that's, I'm like a little, I'm, you know, I'm feeling a little skeptical about what they want us to see versus what's actually on the screen. Mm-hmm, but if I can get beyond that, I agree. I do think that this was a task where two groups of men, two pairs of men were sent out, and in both there was someone who was trying to convince the other that Aegon was not worthy of the crown. So mm-hmm. that was Eric with the twins, and that was Aemond with Sir Crispy. Mm-hmm. That said, they still would have never found him if they hadn't seen the meeting between Missaria and Otto. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they really know him very well. And then in this carriage ride, Allison gives him the dagger, which convinces him, I don't really understand why, that his father really did want him to be king. I don't understand why he makes that leap, but okay, whatever. But then when he says, when she's trying to tell him not to kill his sister, he doesn't even hear her. So all of that, like who gets to Aegon first, he's not listening. It doesn't matter. He's not listening. And then he says, do you even love me? And she responds, you imbecile. And I know that we're supposed to read it as she's like, of course I do. But I don't know. He needed to hear that his mom loved him.
I also don't know that I read it. Of course I do. I kind of feel like that was a nice sidestep of like, I don't really like you. You're no son of mine, but you're the son I got. So you imbecile. You know what I mean? Like I kind of read it more like that, even though that's not the way that they probably intended it. That's the way I felt it. I was like, he's asking you, he needs to hear it. Like, you're not going to say it. Maybe there's a reason why you're not saying it.
Yeah. I mean, she obviously loves him. She stood in front of him.
Well, you know.
I mean, I guess you could also read that as she felt that was her duty.
Yeah.
But she closed her eyes. She was ready to get crisped up.
Well, like, I think the one thing I really thought was, besides her love for him, the thing that I felt most palpably really connected to what we talked about last week about Viserys' duties as a father and the fact that he said he never liked me. You know what I mean? I know my father didn't like me, and he didn't believe anything his mom was saying about wanting to be heir. He thought it was all like freaking her plan to do this. And until he saw the dagger, like you said, we don't see the leap. But I thought this idea that, yeah, my dad didn't like me. He had 20 years to make me the heir if he wanted to do it. He didn't do it. So the fact that he never took the time to plant the seeds of his reasoning and what he was thinking and what he wanted him and tell him what his call to action is. So when the people come to say you should take the crown, that he can forcefully disagree and also put those people down. Like give him his marching orders. Like as the king, he failed there. Like give him the, like you want your son to be loyal to like your decree and what you want. Tell him why. What are you trying to accomplish? There's something that I know needs to happen, and Rhaenyra needs to be on the crown because of this. You have to protect this at all costs, and you're going to see the benefits of it, and so will your children.
Yeah. I mean, I think Viserys definitely failed in that regard.
Yeah.
So the scene in the dragon pit, I got to say, I was salty through the whole thing. But it's pretty cool. They did a pretty good job.
No, like, the scene was great. They did a great job.
They did a good job of the musical cues. They did a great job. Like, you know, the crowd initially, only about half the crowd even claps when they make the announcement. Like, people are confused. I think they did a really good job of the ceremonial part of this. I thought it was cool. I was salty. I was angry. But I was like, this is a cool ceremony.
You're being kind about one thing. There was a serious slow clap vibe. Like they were surprised and they hit him with the. And then it was the applause because they were like, shit, let's not get hung. But there was a real slow clap vibe going on in there. So the whole realm is not sure what to think. And it's like when, you know, I would like to say that I don't know what they felt like, but it reminds me of the day that motherfuckers were running up in the Capitol. I was like, what's happening?
Mm-hmm.
I was stuck. You know what I mean? Like, so Yeah, I get it. That you don't quite know what to do in those big moments, and you kind of just like wait till things settle down to take your side. I'm sure there will be people that will, you know, and Rhaenyra has been on Dragonstone for a while, so maybe she's no longer the Realm's Delight, and there's a lot of people who don't really, you know, feel that connected to her either. So this could have been like a surprise to them, but also like, oh, okay, yeah, we kind of thought this might happen. Cool.
Yeah, I think there's like a sense of like there are people who would feel more comfortable with a man, and then there's people who kind of got used to the idea. Because, right, there's people in that room who their entire lives Rhaenyra has been the heir.
Yeah.
So, like, I think there's a little bit of, like, just confusion, but also people want to support the king. So it's like once the announcement's made, they're not going to take up arms. They're just kind of like, okay, whatever. Like this is what we're doing. As long as, you know, King's Landing remains safe, like what do we care?
Yeah,
and then Rhaenys just completely destroys that like sense of certainty by busting through the floor on her dragon, which was amazing. I was so hyped until, you know, the dragon screamed and then flew away.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't understand. The dragon screamed and flew away. Why did you scream, Maelys, and fly away? Couldn't you just Dracarys yourself? Like, couldn't you just do it yourself? Did you really need the command? Goodness, man.
Yeah. I mean, on second watch, the way I guess I'm reading Eve Best's performance is that she is letting the greens know what's about to pop off. This is the beginning of the Dance of the Dragon. She's reminding them, actually, what you're doing here has very serious consequence, because all these people, you know, like the ones I just killed, are gonna be harmed by the fact that both sides have weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah.
But I still just don't like it narratively. I don't think I think if you're gonna do something like this just because it's dope, I'd rather you not do it.
Yeah, I also think that they were looking for something that they could do to, because the penultimate episode, can they do something big to get to it? And whenever you're making decisions from that place, you know, it's not, I personally as an artist think that you're creating with one eye on the audience. And, you know, there's something, you know, just divulging a little bit to my own, to whenever I'm working on a song and I'm working with other people or collaborating on something, the question that I always bring up when we start thinking about creative choices is, does it serve the song? Like, that's the most important thing. Like, it's not about that would be cool or that effect would sound great or this. It's, does it serve it? And I think that's what they should be asking themselves in moments like that. That it's very hard to believe and suspend your disbelief if a person is doing the things that we're doing. Like, why didn't she burn them all and end the war right there? What would, you know... did they do it just for the cool effect of it, or was it, you know, something that really was in there? And one of the reasons we're asking this for people who aren't book readers is because there's no account of this anywhere in any of the books. There's nothing that would show us that this happened at his coronation, that a dragon came out and roared at the thing, and, you know, and that was what happened. Now, in the show, Viserys says the crown was placed on his head and all the dragons roared as one. Now, he may have misinterpreted that. There was a dragon roaring when the crown was placed on his head and there were a lot of other people cheering. So maybe he heard, because these prophecies seem to always be fucked up, he heard that dragon roaring and the screams of the people in the crowd and assumed them to be roaring. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I kind of thought about later. It's like, well, maybe he just saw the vision wrong and this is actually the thing he was seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think we haven't given Viserys credit here yet, but his prophecy was mostly right.
Yeah.
His son was you know, will sit. I mean, he didn't sit on the Iron Throne. He wasn't placed on the Iron Throne as he saw in his vision, but he's wearing Aegon the Conqueror's crown.
Yeah.
It fits. It checks a lot of the boxes.
It does. It really, really does. And yeah, so that was, it's interesting. I don't know. I think, like, you know, I think that one of the things that I thought about after it, when I got past, I mean, it was days after, y'all, I was like, still like, why didn't she just burn them? So I'm going to keep it 100. Like, even as we, like, moments before we started recording, I'm just like, I still am questioning why she didn't. But I will say, one of the things that I thought was interesting is that there was a line in that conversation with Allison and Rhaenys where Allison said, you know, maybe we can get Rhaenyra to bend the knee if she doesn't have the advantage. But if you go over to her side, she'll have the advantage with more dragons and everything else. So maybe it's just a piece of Rhaenys that believes, you know what? Me leaving is enough of a thing to get them scared, because they're already scared about where I'll go and who I'll side with. That they need to, that'll be enough. But that's the only place I can land without just being totally angered, because the reason that they give is one of the things that I think we want to unpack is what they're saying about the motivation of the women characters in this story. That the reason that's given is that, you know, she didn't want to do this to another mother. I just don't see that happening in Rhaenys' character, anything I've read or saw.
Yeah, I have a lot of issues that they've been kind of percolating the whole season. I still really enjoy the show, so mm-hmm. I'll say that at the top, but I was always out on this prophecy, the Prince was promised being introduced into the show, and it's starting to settle in why. I think what I was sensing was how, and I think I said in our first episode when it was revealed, that what I see it as doing is being like a noble reason for the Targaryens to act terribly. And I think that actually tracks with what has been the meta conversation this week about Rhaenys' behavior, which is like, they're trying to give all of these women wielding powers like noble motivations. And I find it really frustrating because, you know, let's just look at this episode. Let's forget about Rhaenyra for a moment, but let's look at Allison, Missaria, and Rhaenys. Allison and Missaria both have like in-show dialogue that demonstrates that their intentions are about protecting other people and protecting, in Allison's case, her children, and in Missaria's case, the children of Fleabottom. And that's fine, sure, but what other motivations are there? I mean, Allison actually had like ordered Missaria to be murdered in this episode. Yeah. For this noble reason of like protecting her family. And then you have Rhaenys, you know, she didn't have any in-show dialogue, but like in the after show, I think it was Ryan Condal. It could have been Miguel Sapochnik. I don't remember now. I've just let the rage settle over me. But
it was Ryan Condal. It was definitely Ryan Condal.
So he basically says that she sees Allison like as another mother, and that's why she decides not to do that. And she decides not to burn them all in that moment. And I'm just like, this is an unacceptable reasoning. You have all of these women on the show, and they're being given these like pseudo feminism reasons for protecting others. And Allison's quote about, you know, women can, you know, get men to choose peace, it just really rubs me the wrong way. And I want to say that it rubs me especially the wrong way because we also have this other theme of the Second Sons. And we've got multiple people using that theme in the Second Sons that they want their Second Sons so they're not entitled to the same influence and power. And their motivation to their actions, no matter what the atrocity is that
Sons who stand to inherit nothing and will have nothing but the name that we make for ourselves.
Exactly, exactly. And they want more influence, more power. And that's like a legitimate motivation. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, yeah, you know who else would love more influence and more power? Half the population of Westeros who is being told they're not even allowed to inherit. When there's no one else to inherit, we'd rather dig up some cousin from a distance than let you inherit the household. It's just, the whole thing makes my skin crawl. And I know that the show is concerned about, you know, having another Mad Queen incident, but I would deeply prefer a Cersei Lannister or a Margaery Tyrell who wanted and were ambitious in their own right and wanted the same recognition and the same influence as these second sons to women who are wielding power because it protects others or because they have this like noble. I think it's fine to have a couple characters like that, but it just feels like all of the men are like awful because they want to do ambitious stuff and be and have power, and all of the women are awful because they want to protect others. And I just don't like that. I don't like what it says about what the writers think about men and women.
Yeah. I mean, do you think Rhaenyra eventually gets there where she's just like, fuck this, I just want the throne because I want the throne?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope so. Yeah. I think I don't want to say too much, but I think one of the problems with this, the text, is that it's not clear what Rhaenyra and Alicent want. It does seem like they just want power for power's sake. And I think that the showrunners were concerned about how that would be interpreted by the audience. And so they tried to give them something more noble to make sense of their behavior. But I don't like it at all. I also have a problem with that.
Yeah, I think that was weird. One of the things that's also difficult is that they made them friends, right? Like there was a cordial relationship in the beginning, but they were never really friends. And then the game was always on for vying for, you know, Viserys's favor. And, you know, this is kind of captured, but, you know, there's sometimes in lines, like, you know, when Alison says, I'll never be able to earn his favor, I've lost his favor forever, after she slices Rhaenyra's hand. It didn't ring as strongly for me at this point, just because I didn't feel like she was ever in competition for his favor like that. And maybe here, and so I felt like that thing that you're talking about would have made more sense. Everything would have made more sense if you actually just had them kind of. I understand why they made them friends and all that to make it add an extra layer of context. But just having them go after the thing that they wanted, just the greens and the blacks and the way the realm saw it and them being divided, and just this back and forth in a more pronounced way versus, like you said, this other like underlying meaning, it almost feels like Rhaenyra doesn't really even want the throne. She's just doing it because the prophecy and because her dad said it. And that's definitely not how it reads in the book.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, I'll get off my soapbox about that now, but I did also just want to talk about this ongoing theme that seems to pop up in our podcast often, which is that the patriarchy is actually the real villain here.
Yeah, I mean, well, it happened in Bridgerton, and I gotta say, a lot of people probably thought that the period piece stuff was a real departure from what we normally do, even those that enjoyed it. We're like, you guys normally do sci-fi and fantasy stuff. One of the major reasons why we made that departure was because we knew what was coming, and that we were going to cover House of the Dragon. And in between, besides just loving those stories, we knew that this theme would be ever present because it happens throughout all of these things. I really do believe that, just like in Bridgerton, that the males are Aegon's suffering from the patriarchy the same as Rhaenyra, the same as Alicent. It's like Aegon Aegon the Old Elder does not want to be king. He doesn't want to. He doesn't want anything to do with it. Viserys did not want to be king, right? And so the same thing that we were talking about how, like, the patriarchy is just as bad, not just as bad, but also you see
also him, bad, also bad, toxic.
Yeah, and toxic for men is present in this show as well. I see it clearly in this show.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that this, I don't feel bad for Aegon, but like, he is unfit and he shouldn't have to do this. And if the society would accept that women could rule, and if their whole notion of who can inherit, who can own things, who can have influence in this world wasn't disqualifying half of the population, then some of his suffering would be relieved as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that watching him and Aemon talk to each other about this, I'm like, these kids never had a chance. Like, this always sucked for them.
Yeah.
This has always been awful for them. This notion that, like, they have to take on this burden that isn't even part of their birthright in terms of birth order, but they have to have this responsibility now because, gee, a woman can't be equal, even though their mother has essentially been ruling in the absence of their father through his sickness. It's yeah. just, it's totally bizarre.
I mean, but also when you look at, when you just look at also that they, how something starts a lot of times is, can tell you a lot. And this started with auto manipulating Viserys through sending in his child to, you know, be a shoulder to cry on that eventually would become, you know, trying to, like he said, if you're right that I did all this, then I made you queen of the Seven Kingdoms. And he takes that as being like good, where I think in that moment she's like, yeah, that's exactly what you did. And it didn't really, it wasn't really great, bro. Like, you don't understand the position I'm in right now. And
yeah, she would have just liked some self-determination.
Yeah.
You know, she may have still pursued it, right? She may have wanted, she may have had that ambition, but she wanted the opportunity to figure that out on her own, to self-determine. And that's what all the women are asking for. And that's also what the second sons are asking for.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, man.
So soapbox put away until I'm sure next week when I will take it out.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even a so. It's just part of the. It's part of, you know. I think it. You're right. I think you're calling out things that we can all see. You know, they've made some attempts. You know, this has been. They've made some attempts to try to like have more inclusion, more diversity. Give you know, show how unfair. Like they verbally, the creators have said they wanted to show how unfair it was for women in this world, and in that was all noble, but they also are taking away some of like this, like you said, like this natural kind of like thing that every person has, male or female, to pursue, sometimes just want what you want because you want it, and there's like there's something that was special about that in Game of Thrones that you don't want to lose by creating all these like high ideals about why you do something, you know? So,
mm-hmm.
I agree. Anyway, with that being said, that's gonna do it. Almost there. Next week will be the finale of the first season of House of the Dragon. We are so appreciative of this journey that we've been on with all of you. Please go and hit us up on Kin Folklore Pod on Instagram and on Twitter. We appreciate the reviews. We got some new reviews in. We appreciate you for listening, leaving your comments. You can also email us at kinfolklore@gmail.com. And until next week, see you next time.
Bye, everyone.